Welcome to Voices of Care, where you get to ask your questions to experienced providers about all things pregnancy, birth, and beyond. This is your host, Katie Crow, owner of Katie C. Doula, serving families in Southeast Michigan through birth education, doula support, birth photography, and birth art classes. Thank you for joining me. It's time to hear from a voice of care. Today, I'm speaking with amazing fellow birth worker, Bridget Meetling. She's a Bradley Method birth instructor of 12 years and a certified lactation counselor of 7. She serves families in the Michigan Tri-County region. Most importantly, she is a homeschool mom to 2 amazing kiddos and a zookeeper to her dog, bird, and tarantula. Bridget is passionate about natural birth and helping women navigate the birthing year and inspiring them to trust their birthing instincts. I can't wait for you guys to hear this conversation as we kick off Voices of Care. Hello, Bridget. I'm so glad we're able to talk tonight and discuss your passion about birthing. I'm really thankful you're able to come on the podcast. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited about this conversation. I can't wait.
Yeah, so I am too, because I actually just yesterday talked to a couple who's looking for birth classes. And, you know, I was able to give them the list of the 3, which is Lamaze, hypnobirthing, and the Bradley method. And they're like, What do they do in them? And I'm like, I don't know exactly. I know a little bit. So you are the Bradley Method guru, and I'm super excited to pick your brain about this because you've been teaching it for 12 years.
Yeah, this is my 12th year, the beginning of the 12th year now. Yeah, and sometimes when I think of it, I just cannot believe, like, I've come a long way from teaching, you know, by one little couple to kind of get my certification status and all the way through now 12 years in, and how many families I've gotten to meet and just to impact their lives during the childbirth year. It's been really cool.
Right, because those years of childbearing, and those are experiences you never forget. You know, you might forget different trips you take in life. You're just never going to forget that journey of growing your baby and having your baby, and that you get to make an impact on that journey. That's just so awesome.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's such an honor to be invited in as a birth worker, right? So for you as a doula, like, you know what that's like, to just be so honored that a family trusts you and that they are welcoming you into that space. That's just a vulnerable time. So it
absolutely
really is quite an
honored.
Honor.
Honored is exactly the word I always use.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the Bradley method. What is the history of it? Is this a relatively new technique? Tell me about it.
Yeah. So the Bradley method, and this is actually something I love about the Bradley method, is that it has stood the test of time. It is not like one of those, you know, fly by night, like this new trendy thing. It's been around a long time. And I'm actually surprised that more people haven't heard of the Bradley method in more of like a mainstream way. It actually has been around since about the 50s. So Dr. Bradley, he was an obstetrician who was practicing in Colorado, and he was natural childbirth is not something Dr. Bradley invented, of course. It's been around for all of human history.
Right, yes.
But prior to this method kind of becoming more popular and commonplace, dads were relegated to the waiting room. Mm-hmm. And so Dr. Bradley was really just like, hey, there's something not right here. There's some kind of disconnect going on where we have these partners that are out in the waiting room while mom is giving birth. And he just felt like this was something that partners needed to be more integral in. And
I love that. I didn't realize that. Is that like a big focus with the Bradley method, is
it
partner
really,
support?
Yeah, it really is. Like, that is our main goal, is to make sure that mom coming to class, of course, is very important, but also making sure she's got a committed partner in the picture. Mm-hmm. And I just mean by that is somebody who is going to go with her to all of the classes, who's going to do all of the practice with her, who's really just as committed as she is. Because we all know when it comes to birth, sometimes things can take a quick left turn that you were not expecting. And having that partner alongside you, who's been with you through all of the classes, who's done all the training with you, it makes a huge difference for moms, really. It just is like that committed person who's right there alongside them is going to have a big impact on them.
So ideally, right, the partner is the person she's been intimate with, the father of her child. But, you know, we live in a broken world. And so could that partner look like a best friend, a sister, a doula?
Yeah, I actually, early on in my teaching, I had a mom come in, and it was her stepdaughter who was committed to being her coach. And it was so cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So her husband was a long haul truck driver. And so she was able to have her stepdaughter, who was there more consistently, you know, due to his schedule. So she would come to the classes with her, and it was just such a cool relationship to see. And she was planning on being there for the birth of her sibling.
That's so beautiful. I love it was really cool. That's just multi-generational. That's really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I've even had some couples where they're no longer even together, but still the partner can see the value in taking the classes with the mom. And it's, you know, he's invested in the outcome of his birth as well, whether they're together or not. So I've even had that a few times, which I think is really just very unique to how the Bradley method can equip anybody to come alongside mom and to be her birth coach.
That is so awesome.
Yeah.
So what specifically, what kind of things does it do to help prepare couples for birth? Is it like breathing techniques? We talk about stretches. What are we doing with the Bradley method?
Yeah. So not any breathing techniques, which I know that could be, you know, kind of a marker for some other birth methods possibly, but we really just want to focus on making sure moms are doing abdominal breathing. So this is just the kind of breathing that you would do when you're in your most relaxed state. So there's no kind of thinking about how am I supposed to be breathing? Is there a breathing pattern I should be doing? So we just focus on abdominal breathing. And Dr. Bradley's goal was that you are using mental, emotional, and physical relaxation techniques in lieu of using medications to get through the birth experience. So we work a lot on those three different types of relaxation, whether it's going to be positions or things like massage or things like counter pressure or things like talking about what specifically relaxes mom. Maybe that's things like guided imagery or things like hydrotherapy, right? So it's really a time for partners to learn specifically about how mom is relaxed.
Yeah, that sounds like couples therapy as well as birth prep, joked, right?
Yeah, I have joked about that. I'm like, this is date night and therapy. So we're doing a little of everything here. And it's cool getting to see dads, especially how they really just blossom into this role. You know, they start out coming to the first class and they might seem a little bit like, what are we doing here? And then by the end, they are experts in their wife. They are experts in exactly what makes her tick. They know exactly how to help her. So then I think it comes through all the practices that we do. So we practice those different relaxation techniques. We practice all of the positions that could possibly be used in labor. One of my favorite classes that we do a labor rehearsal. So the couples they'll walk through stations that we have set up and they'll practice doing contractions at each one. So very hands-on. And the dads by the end of that class, they're like, okay, now I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I've got an idea. Like, right, talking about it's one thing, but like literally doing it.
As a doula, I would pay my own money for some of my clients to go through that, 'cause that sounds so helpful. Yeah. And dad sometimes can just look like a deer in the headlights. And you're like, you can do this, but it's hard to learn on the fly, but you guys really take time. And Bradley method, it's quite involved. You know, it's not like a 3-week virtual course.
Right.
What's involved in it? It seems quite
long. It's really extensive. Yeah. We are probably the longest birth series that's out there. So it's a 12-week class, is a full series.
That's 3 months. That's a whole trimester.
It is. And Dr. Bradley, he really pushed for this because science tells us that to create good habits takes time. And so if we can have a couple start with us, you know, usually about the early part of their second trimester, we can make sure they have the full amount of time to build these good habits to make it become second nature for them. So I tell my couples, you know, I might repeat something a few times in each class, and that's because I want it to just be planted in your brain, right? Yes. If you hear something one time, you are going to forget it, especially in the heat of the moment of, you know, how exciting and chaotic birth can be, especially for a first time couple.
Yes.
So I know if I've told you 5, 6, 7, 8, 12 times, like, you're probably going to be like, by the end, my goodness, I wish you'd stop saying that. But I guarantee the day of, they're like, oh, yeah, I remember talking about this a few times and it's in my head. So that's the reason for those longer classes. You know, we want to make sure it becomes, like I said, second nature for the partners.
I love that so much. You know, I'll go over as a doula, you know, I'll do meetings with my clients and I'll go over like, here's some birth positions or here's some relaxation techniques, but I always tell them, you don't have to remember this all. I will remember it for you because they're getting just like a blip on the screen with what I can give, because I can't meet with them for 12 weeks. I just don't have the capacity and they probably don't want to see me for 12 weeks. But I have to kind of be their brain sometimes in the birth room to help them bring these things to mind. But if it's just intuitive for them to do, it's going to be so much more effective and take away a lot of that fear. So there aren't those moments of panic, what to do next before the doula steps in. They know themselves, oh, okay, she's doing this, so I should do that. And they can just have such a natural dance to their labor.
Definitely. And I tell my dads that too. You know, I don't want them to ever think like, oh, I have to do all this work that a doula would do. I tell them, if you want to hire a doula, they're going to be there to kind of give you that little cue that you need that will call back some of that information that we learned in class. And so that's why I love if they do choose to hire a doula, it's really just a great solid team then, right? So dad doesn't feel like, oh my gosh, I do have to remember all this. And sometimes the pressure that can cause for him. But
yes, yeah, or if he needs to get a cup of coffee or use the restroom, you know, it's nice to have that other set of hands.
Right. Who's just as willing and just as able to do exactly what he's doing for his wife. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, that's so awesome. So would you say the majority of Bradley Method couples, are they just having home births? Is that where this is most effective?
I've actually seen a big shift probably around 2020, where before 2020, most of my couples were hospital couples. Wow. They were choosing, they were choosing hospital births. And, you know, this information really is for whatever birth environment that you're choosing. It can be a home birth, it can be a hospital birth, a birth center birth, whatever it is. And you're going to find something that is going to speak to you and that you find value in. I would say after 2020, now I'm seeing a big split of probably about half and half. Half of my couples are hospital, half are probably home birth or birth center couples. So a pretty good split.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you think that it is almost more important for a couple choosing to birth in the hospital to get the support to have a natural birth if they want one?
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, I would say nowadays, it's probably, you know, a little harder for a couple to navigate a hospital birth if they're not comfortable advocating for themselves.
Yes.
And that's something else I really love about the Bradley Method is that we just teach couples how to advocate, right? So we know how important that word is nowadays, especially. And so when these couples come in and they're a little green with, you know, what are we supposed to do when we get to the hospital? You know, we get a few classes in and they realize like, wow, I had no idea how much I did not know. And so then I ask them like, call back the mindset you had when you started these classes, right? And by the time we get to the end, they're just, you know, mind blown about how much they've learned. And so many times they say like, I don't know how anybody would give birth in a hospital without knowing this information. And there's kind of that idea. Yeah. Right. So like, there's the idea of, what you don't know won't hurt you, right?
Yeah,
it's totally not true.
No, yeah. It's what you don't, what you don't know, what you don't know, and it might hurt you.
And it might hurt you. Yeah. So I think that's something that even more so. Yeah, you're right. Like those couples choosing a hospital birth, they need to have that information, and it's really just not so much for them to feel like they have to go in and do battle or anything, but it's more about, you know, are we making sure we've chosen the right hospital for us? Have we chosen the correct care provider for us? Do we know the questions to ask to get informed consent? Do we know all of these interventions and things they're going to talk about? Do we know what those are? I think that's even, you know, more important for them to just have that basic information.
And does the Bradley Method go into that? Would you guys talk about like, what is an epidural? How does it impact labor? Yeah. All those kinds of things.
Yeah, we are super extensive. You know, when I tell couples like, this is the most comprehensive birth class you're going to take, I mean it. We talk about everything. Even 12 years into it now, you know, I've learned what kind of information do couples really need nowadays, right? Well, how do we make sure that they're getting the information they need? Because maybe something that would have worked, you know, 15, 20 years ago in a certain hospital setting is not going to work now. And so I've added in a lot more things. So we go in my classes specifically, we do go more in depth into talking about inductions. We go through all the different types of inductions there are.
Well, it's just such a common practice now. I mean, it feels like every third birth. I, as a doula, have ends up being an induction, whether they wanted one or not. It, you know, either they're worn down by the end of pregnancy or some problem arises that they have to, or the doctor tells them or whatever. And it's just a fact of the birthing world in the United States in 2025. It's just the way it is. So
I want them armed with that knowledge. You know, if they do find themselves faced with, you know, even the suggestion of an induction, I want them to know exactly how to navigate that conversation with their provider. So my goal is that nothing is going to be catching them off guard, but they're going to at least have heard about it in classes. We'll at least have had a conversation about it so that they'll feel a little bit more comfortable, you know, as they're talking through their options. They'll know what they're talking about.
I think that is so awesome. And even just that little bit of knowledge, sometimes that is the power, and that is what empowers a couple to say, you know what, we would actually like a nurse that's going to support us, or, you know, we told you we don't want this, please stop offering it. We decline, mm-hmm. sign the paper, mm-hmm. quit asking.
Yeah.
And just
yeah.
knowing that they're allowed to do that sometimes is all they need to know. And they're like, oh, I'm allowed to have a choice. Yes,
yeah.
you are.
Yeah.
So I think that's fabulous.
Yeah, right. It's very powerful when you know that you are part of that decision-making process for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that a big part of the coping that is taught with the Bradley method would be relaxation.
Yeah.
And so I actually have read a lot of Instagram posts and things, and they're like, don't use the word relax during labor because it can almost be triggering. Like,
sure.
don't tell me to relax. I yeah. can't possibly relax. I'm contracting yeah. every 2 minutes.
Yeah. It's almost when someone tells you calm down and you're like, I am calm.
Right. So what do you do when mom, she just can't relax? How would you help her?
So I will tell you just from my own personal experience, I myself was a Bradley Method student long ago. And so I am not somebody who is naturally inclined to relax. I just am not. I'm a pretty high energy person. And so taking the classes and going into it with the idea of like, I'm supposed to relax through this, like, how is that going to work? Right. It sounded very foreign to me. And what I find is really important is that there's always something that makes mom calm. And what I mean by that is not necessarily like we're thinking like, oh, she's totally zenned out and you can tell that she's like, you know, mm-hmm. transcending or whatever. What I'm talking right. about is what can make someone calm can be knowing that they have a provider who is really supportive and really mm-hmm. encouraging of the things they want. And maybe we have a mom who that's how she feels most calm, is knowing that she's in this space with people around her that are going to make sure she's not, you know, coerced into something. And that's what's calming for her, right? That's mm-hmm. what's relaxing for her.
Oh, for sure.
So, you know, everybody's different. So then like, what is it? Let's find that thing that makes mom relax. Maybe it's not like the typical sense of feeling relaxed, like I mentioned, you know, like that zen mm-hmm. out that we might see. It's more about, does she feel safe? Does she feel supported? Does she feel respected?
Sometimes oh, I love that.
Those things that make her feel calm and relaxed, right?
Yeah. So. Oh, that is great. Because especially like more type A
yeah.
people. So I'm a hard type B. Don't white glove my house. But the people that are type A, it is harder for them to do like the limp noodles and music, mm-hmm. relaxing. But mm-hmm. knowing that all of the boxes are checked, that yeah. their needs are being met, that is yep. what brings them peace and relaxes them. I love that. I got to think on that some more. That's really
good. I know. And it's, you know, that's conversations that we have throughout our classes. You know, we'll ask discussion questions about, you know, where does she tense up first? What things relax her? You know, mm-hmm. so we're really getting a lot of reflecting going on, because sometimes you think of, you know, oh, this is how I currently handle pain or something uncomfortable. And I'm like, you probably already have built-in tools that you don't even realize that you mm-hmm. have, just by the way that maybe we handle chronic pain or maybe something like a headache or a sub yes. toe or something, right? So we always have tools that we automatically yes. go to.
Yeah.
And those can work in labor sometimes.
I just had a client last night. We were doing our very last prenatal, and she has some beautiful tattoo artwork. And she's like, you know what? I think I'm going to have to do what I do when I get a tattoo. And just, I said, that's exactly what you have
yep.
to do.
Yeah.
That's exactly, we found it. That's it. Yeah. That's what you yeah. need to do. And yeah. so we were excited. We kind of like, she kind of came to this realization, like, I can cope through that. And that's the same way. She's like, cause you don't have a choice when you're getting a tattoo. Nope.
Right.
And you don't have a choice when you have your baby. So you can do it.
Yeah.
That was
yeah,
such a beautiful sure. moment of like, oh,
so. Yeah. I love those light bulb moments, honestly. And like, those are so fun. Obviously when I see them with a couple, but when I see them with dads, those are my favorite, the light bulb moments with dads. When, like I said, they might start out the series kind of being a little annoyed, like, oh, we're taking a class, like it's on a Sunday. Like, I just want to be hanging out at home and relaxing, and fine, mm-hmm. I'll be dragged to this class, you know? And so when they first come in, they may feel a little bit like, you know, out of their element. And mm-hmm. then as we start rolling, so like the first few classes, we're just really laying a foundation. And then from like class 4 to 12, we're like the meat and potatoes, like let's dive into it.
Mm-hmm.
And the things they get to learn and these realizations they have about what this experience is going to be like, right? So as much as we can prepare them in that context, right? There's nothing like experiencing your birth for the first mm-hmm. time, but you know, as much as we can prepare them, they're like, wow, like I had no idea this is the kind of stuff that happens, or these are the things mm-hmm. that happened to the mom. And they're just super excited. And like, I love mm-hmm. that switch of like, now you're engaged, now you're mm-hmm. getting it, now you're on board with it. And it's really fun to see that.
Oh, and that's so great when they can have that before the birth, because you see it a lot. And like with my husband and families I work with, you'll see the dad have that light bulb moment 20 minutes after the baby's born and they're like, wow, birth is a lot. And you're like,
yeah,
I wish you had known that yesterday.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's a lot. So it's still great when they can have that light bulb moment before they're in the situation. That's really valuable for them and for definitely. Their wife or for the mom who's trying to go through labor and needs that support. So
I learned from a really great she was a doula and she was teaching us some additional skills, and one of the things that she said that really stuck with me, you know, sometimes when we hear moms or see moms in labor hitting a wall where they're just, they don't really know how to cope with what they're going through. And so like their automatic reflex sometimes is to ask for medication or scream for medication, right? They're yelling at somebody sometimes. And what she said to that was so impactful. She said, that's not a mom asking for medication. She's asking for you to be present with her at this birth and experience this with her. And I've made sure that I've taught my dads that, especially all these dads in classes, these partners in classes, they need to understand, you know, especially when you're taking a class like the Bradley method, that the goal is to have this baby without medication, with little to no intervention. And so if you hear mom at the end of her labor, at some point she's asking for medication or, you know, crunching her hand and yelling for medication, she's really asking, hey, I need more active coaching. I need you to be present with me here. Like, step into this moment with me. And that usually, like, that just makes such a big difference for her and carries her through the rest of the way. And so I think it's really important for partners to know that. I think it's really good
that
information.
That is just so powerful. Like, I'm gonna take that with me too. I got some good nuggets, you know, put in my own practice. Cause it can be hard when you hit that wall or you see someone you care about hitting that wall and you just want to give them whatever they want, but really they just want you supporting with them, experiencing this with them. And that's what'll get them through it. That's amazing. Definitely. That's great.
Yeah.
So beyond teaching the Bradley method, you're also a lactation. Is it counselor or consultant?
Counselor. So I'm a CLC. So that's a certified lactation counselor.
Okay. Very good. Yeah. And you've been doing that for 7 years?
7 years now. Yeah. So that started from, you know, 5 years into teaching birth and I had breastfed my own children. And so I had my own experiences with that, but I was just seeing such a huge gap in breastfeeding education for families and for them to have the understanding that what goes on during their birth can have this huge lasting impact on breastfeeding. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. And sometimes, you know, moms, especially if they've expressed that they want to breastfeed their babies and then they struggle with it, they tend to really beat themselves up and they really just, you know, get down on themselves and they think that they're doing something wrong or they're failing. And that's so heartbreaking when you understand that probably it was something that happened during your birth that's causing some struggles for you. And if we can kind of go back and pinpoint maybe something that happened that we can, you know, okay, now we have the knowledge, now we know what's causing some of these struggles, now we can address it, right? You kind of get to the root cause of that. And so when I saw that, that was something that really just lit this fire in me to make sure that I had the information to give my families, right? So when I teach breastfeeding in Bradley, it's so much better now. It's just, we go so much deeper into the topic. It's instead of it being kind of surface level where it's like, here's how you latch your baby. Like, we're really going into it. And so I think that's huge for families, right? They need to have that knowledge beforehand. And that's why I started to study that link.
Oh, that's so interesting. And you know, I see it with women. My own breastfeeding journeys were like, bleh, they were terrible. They were not good ones, but, and it's so hard for moms, especially if birth didn't go the way they planned. Maybe they ended up with a C-section, which is not what they wanted. And now on top of it, 3 weeks into breastfeeding, their milk has dried up and they can't, and now they can't do that either. And they just beat themselves up and it breaks my heart. I always feel very ill-equipped to support that because that was not my golden hour either there.
Right.
But how is it, like, in what ways does a difficult birth, a traumatic birth, or maybe just a birth that didn't quite go according to plan, how does that impact a woman's breastfeeding journey?
Yeah, I think two major ways that I see the impact is one, like on the scientific level, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about literally what's happening in mom's body. I just did listened to a really fantastic talk from Intentional Birth. That's the group who did it, but it was called The Induction Equation. And they talked about how sometimes, right, we were just talking about how there's so many births that are induced, and we see that when these babies are induced really early for whatever reason, when they're induced so early, they are not ready to breastfeed. And so when they are born after this induction, that can be sometimes really difficult on the baby, right? Let alone the mom. Of course, it's difficult on mom, but it's having an impact on our babies. And then what happens is after the birth, perhaps whatever was going on during this induction led to a need for separation between mom and baby. And so now we have the separation that will affect how many feeds and skin to skin time with her baby that she's just not able to get. So we're literally talking about the baby is born a little earlier than they were supposed to be, as if it was an induction. They don't take the induction well, and so then they need to be separated from mom. On the emotional side of things, right now we have this innate need to hold our baby after birth, and now we have this separation going on where moms and babies
it's the most heartbreaking moment for me at every seems like almost every hospital birth, the baby ends up like, no, put it back, bring it back. She just needs her baby. What are we doing, people?
I mean, like that prolactin that your body starts producing the moment your placenta is birthed, like it's such a powerful hormone. It's the one that's the mothering hormone, right? That's the one that makes us want to hold our baby close. And when we get in there and we separate those moms and babies, right? You know, that's really having an emotional pull on mom as well. And that's something that I think we can educate families on how to lessen the effect on mom and baby if there does have to be a separation for them. Some of the things I teach my students, if we know that mom and baby are separated, let's make sure we are kind of replicating as much as possible the things that she would normally be doing, right? So normally if baby were with her, she'd be doing skin to skin and cuddling her baby and smelling her baby and looking at her baby. But when they're separated, she can't do that. So we talk about bridging the gap, right? So we talk about swapping items that smell like mom and baby so that they can smell each other. Our babies need to smell mom, right? So, you know, take the little hat the baby was wearing or a swaddle blanket, give that back to mom, have maybe the pillowcase she was laboring with or the hospital gown she was wearing, something she had close to her skin, go to baby. Things like dad doing videos or FaceTime or sending pictures so mom can see her baby while she's hand expressing her milk, while she's pumping, to really get the oxytocin moving. It's not perfect, but it's better than nothing. So that's something I think is really important for couples to have.
So on a scale of like 1 to 10, how important would you say the uninterrupted skin to skin time immediately after birth is for breastfeeding specifically?
100. One to 10, it's 100. Yeah, that's really important. And I think that's something that, you know, couples are fighting for more and more. Another thing that I learned from that induction equation webinar that I did, they were talking about the you know, we have the golden hour as kind of being like this standard, like we need to have an hour of cuddles and skin to skin time with our baby. But they found that it's actually closer to 16 hours is what we need. Oh, so 16 hours, right? They called it the 1,000 minutes. 1,000 minutes of skin to skin time with mom and baby is going to help.
I can just picture some OB's faces like, okay, we would like 16 golden hours. And they're just going to like freak out.
They'll laugh you out of the room, right? Actually, my recent couples, they were like, so in a practical sense, how do we get that 16 hours uninterrupted? I was like, you know, because they had asked, do we tell them that? Do we put that on our birth plan? I said, I wouldn't. I said, it's your baby. Like, just say no. If someone comes in and tries to scoop them up to do newborn procedures or to weigh the baby or whatever, just tell them, like, hey, we're not ready yet. You know, that's all you have to do.
It drives me crazy because, you know, the most important thing in this baby's life is so that we can text grandma how much they weigh. Why? Just leave it. Its weight is not going to change that much. Exactly. Leave it alone.
Exactly.
It drives me crazy.
Yeah. We don't need to know it that bad. We got bigger
people got, it's because they got their betting pools, right? Know, on what the baby's going to weigh. They need to
Someone's
know.
Someone's got
to
cash in, right?
Right. Exactly. No. Yeah.
So that's super important.
And if baby needs like assistance, we want them to have assistance.
Absolutely.
Obviously, a healthy breathing baby is paramount. We all agree on that. But if baby is crying and baby is pink and leave the baby alone. Just leave it alone. Leave it alone.
Hands off.
I'll get it's my blood boiling.
I know.
So after a difficult birth, maybe mom and baby don't need to be separated. Mm-hmm. Maybe it wasn't like a medically difficult birth, but so my second baby was an induction, totally unnecessary. I just didn't know any better.
Sure.
And it was a excruciating Pitocin, no epidural, 18 hours induction. It's horrible. I was very traumatized. And when they handed him to me, I like couldn't even give him the name I had picked out because I didn't want him. I was so traumatized at that point.
Yeah.
How do you help mom navigate breastfeeding when everyone is healthy and well, but like she can't even do it?
Yeah.
How do you help her navigate that?
Yeah, that's so, you know, I do not see families in the hospital for lactation support. Mm-hmm. So at the time I'm seeing mom and baby during the postpartum time, we're usually a few days into it, you know, when really the dust has settled and she's back at home and kind of back in her own space with this new baby who can feel like a complete stranger, right? And for especially, if it was not a good experience, that can be something that just starts that kind of resentment towards breastfeeding because breastfeeding can be difficult. And now you've got this like very needy little thing that you feel like there's no connection to. That can be really hard for moms emotionally. And so I will tell you, honestly, a few times I've gone for lactation support and ended up just being the shoulder to cry on and to just have a conversation about the process through your birth. Because sometimes they maybe haven't even had that time to really like pause and think back to what did I just experience, right? There's a lot going on in those first few days. Like you're getting discharged from the hospital, you're getting home, you're getting stuff unpacked, you know, figuring out, you know, sleep
and schedules. Everyone that comes to see you wants to see the baby. And you might tell them your birth story, but like your aunt, your mom and your grandma, and they don't even care. They're kind of like, oh, that's great. Let me hold the baby. And so she just feels more and more drawn into this corner of see me. And so that kind of is what you do sometimes.
Yeah. In so that's something that's really important, right? Like they need to be heard. They need to get this out and they need to say it to somebody who understands the words they're saying.
Yeah.
I know that sounds silly. Like they're not speaking a foreign language, but you know, somebody who's familiar with the birth world and what that looks like and the ins and outs of it, you know, that's the person they need to process through with. And I think somebody just being compassionate enough to be like, listen, what happened to you was not okay. The way that you were treated or the experience that you just had that was really difficult, like that's not okay. And I'm sorry that you're going through that. And sometimes just hearing that from somebody, I think makes a bigger difference. Like just letting them say what they need to say and saying like, I hear you, I see you. And then I think the next important step to that is talking through their birth goals then, right? We have to figure out, not your birth goals, I'm sorry, your breastfeeding goals, right? Yeah. So once we've talked through the birth that just happened during your birth, now let's look forward and let's talk about where do you see yourself going with breastfeeding? Is this something that you do want to continue on? And what does that mean for you? You know, I've had some moms where they, I think, felt really guilty about the birth experience and maybe the impact it had on their baby. And so they almost feel like to fix it, breastfeeding is the only answer, even though they're struggling with it and they're having a really hard time, you know. And it's like, well, you know, this breastfeeding shouldn't be like your answer to fixing that. Like you got to heal
you first.
Right. Exactly.
It's not penance.
Yeah. And it should be something that you are looking forward to doing, right? Because breastfeeding is such a special relationship. And so I always want to just check in with mom and make sure that there is like a healthy outlook to why she's breastfeeding and her goals behind that. So that's one of the ways that I like to help moms. It's just to be there to listen, to be that shoulder to cry on, to also sometimes strategize like, hey, if this isn't working out, let's figure out why this isn't working out for you. Is it you don't have enough hands to go around, right? Especially if it's a second or third time mom, she's got little ones she's got to tend to, and how much work breastfeeding can be in the beginning.
And it's a full-time, breastfeeding is like a full-time job. It's like 40 hours a week.
Yeah,
at least. So yeah, you got to budget that time to make it happen if it's going to happen successfully.
Yeah. And I think that when she can have that conversation, she can identify her goals and then she can see that there is a workable strategy for her. It, it makes that burden a lot lighter for her. And is it going to be perfect? No, I'm sure we're going to have, you know, ups and downs with it as with anything, but I think that kind of lifts the fog a bit for her as she's like, okay, like this doesn't have to be something that carries through and ends up being a negative experience. It can be a happy, positive experience to breastfeed this baby.
So say mom has had a C-section or some other reason that her and baby have been separated and she smelled the hat, she looked at the videos, but still she's having trouble getting her milk to come in. And then they go home from the hospital. What are some of the best ways you suggest for parents to help establish the milk supply that maybe is a little delayed in becoming established because of separation at the hospital?
Yeah. So that's something, you know, when we talk about like the impact of our birth on breastfeeding, that's one of the things that can happen, right? We have this really long delay in mom's milk coming in because maybe some of the medications she was given or mm-hmm. just being induced too early, right? The body wasn't ready to make mm-hmm. the milk yet.
Oh, yeah.
And so when she is finally home and she's settled in, you know, we really want moms in bed. And this is something that is really difficult, I think, in our culture is yes. to ask yes, moms to stay in bed mm-hmm. For any length of time, right? Where we're like, hey, like you have to heal from this birth and you have to sit in this bed as much as it might drive you nuts to like see the clutter kind of accumulating around you. Mm-hmm. Just stay in bed and do lots of skin to skin with your baby uninterrupted, making sure that you have other people around you who understand this is important to you and they mm-hmm. can do all the other tasks, right? So they can take care of the laundry, they can take care of the grocery shopping. Well, you know, I think it's important for dad to be kind of in that space as well. You know, not have him do all the chores. I want dad to be bonding with this baby as well. So I say like, if you can spend 3-4 days in bed and just chilling at home, you're low key, not doing much of anything, not having a ton of outside visitors, that's really going to help. I don't know if I can overstate it enough mm-hmm. how important skin to skin is and just constantly offering the breast as much as mom can. You know, breastfeeding is supply and demand. That's how our milk is made. Mm-hmm. So if mom can just kind of have her breast out ready to go for baby, that anytime they cue to feed, I always say when in doubt, pull your breast out. Like that's
oh, I love that. That's, I'm going to make that bumper sticker.
Yeah. It's going to be your go-to tool for right now to anytime your baby makes a sound and you're like, I'm not sure what they need. Hey, try the breast. Maybe mm-hmm. they just need to drink or they just need to have a little bit of a snack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So lots of skin to skin and rest.
I love that. And you know, one of the things I think of, especially in the culture I was raised in, if I'm going to be able to do skin to skin and have the breast out whenever baby makes a noise, that's going to require privacy.
Yeah.
Which I think is also another thing that's hard in our culture, because for whatever reason, instead of 40 days of rest or like all the things that they do in the rest of the world, mm-hmm. we have like, and now you get to be a hostess. So clean your house and bake some muffins and get dressed and hand the baby to someone while you wait on that. It's like, what is happening? Yeah. Where really that front door should just basically be locked unless someone's coming to vacuum for you. Right. And you're just left alone to hold your baby for a while because that's what you need to do.
Yeah. When I see moms for postpartum visits and the first thing they say is, I'm so sorry for the mess. I'm like, no, this is good. This is a mm-hmm. sign that you have been working on breastfeeding. If I walk in and your house is spotless and I know you haven't had anybody
We're
over
suspicious.
To help you. Yeah. I'm like, where are you hiding your mother-in-law? Who's cleaning for you?
Yeah. Oh, I wish everyone had like a Mary made mother-in-law that could just come in and be like, oh, you stay in there. I'll make you some soup and clean your house and mm-hmm. we'll see you in a week.
Everyone yeah, the fairy godmother, that. Right?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Don't we all need one of those? I still wake That'd up to great. Dirty dishes and I think, oh, they didn't wash themselves. That's
if someone could just make the beds. That's all I want.
So what would you say in postpartum in general? Because we just talked a little bit about how our culture is kind of the worst at postpartum of the whole world. We're the worst.
Why are we like this?
I don't know. It's our rugged individualism of America. I don't know. We went out as pioneers and we had no one to help us. So we gave birth and then we planted the garden. I don't know what it is.
That sounds right.
What would you say is the biggest piece that's missing or the most important postpartum planning piece that families should do in the months and weeks leading up to birth that is going to serve them in the long run?
Yeah, the Bradley Method actually has got really extensive information during a couple of our classes about postpartum. We cover it in two parts. The first part is like postpartum for your baby specifically. Like, mm-hmm. what is your baby doing, right? So I was not the person who was inclined to want to babysit infants. Like, mm-hmm. if I was holding a baby, I was sweating. I don't want to hold your baby. So I did not have any of those, like, nurturing skills, and I was completely in the dark about it. So we spend one whole chunk of class time talking about newborn behaviors, right? Mm-hmm. Is it normal for them to do this thing? Is it normal for them to do this thing? When do I expect them to do this thing? And that is so important because as a new parent, you spend so much time and energy worrying about mm-hmm. every little thing your baby is doing.
And Googling it and then panicking yourselves because Google is not our friend.
Step away from the Google, right? We end up on that rabbit trail and we're like, oh mm-hmm. no. So
it's a syndrome.
No. It is. I was that mom. Yeah, I was that mom for sure. So my heart goes out to them. You know, I might be like chuckling a little bit, but it's because I'm really thinking of myself at that time and I'm pretty sure I had the pediatrician on speed dial and I was calling about everything. So I think knowing what is normal for baby is one of the biggest keys. The second biggest key is going to be what is normal for mom, right? Mm-hmm. So as you are healing from postpartum, there's a lot of changes happening in mom's body, right? We think pregnancy is a huge change for our body. Postpartum, I think even more so, our body is just like completely new.
And rapid, because pregnancy is a 9-month process. Postpartum happens in 5 minutes and it's now quick. You're postpartum.
Yeah, it's quick. And so that can really throw a lot of people off, I think, especially emotionally, you know, where you maybe just got used to having this pregnant body and then suddenly you're like, oh gosh, this is my postpartum body now. And the way I'm feeling with those hormones just being a roller coaster that you're on. So I think knowing what's normal for your baby, what's normal for mom and the healing process that she's going to go through, as well as having a solid plan in place for who is going to be helping you. Who are the safe people that you will invite into your space? And I mean safe people because I think sometimes we might have very opinionated family or friends who maybe they parent a different way than we are planning on parenting, and they will have no qualms about sharing what you're doing wrong, right? Or making you question what you're doing, or making you doubt, you
Quit
know.
Quit feeding that baby all the time.
Yeah,
stop they need to get on baby. They need to get on a schedule. That's what I tried to do. Them. That's what was told to me. And it just sank that ship. It was bad.
Yeah. And it can really take the wind out of your sails. You know, as you're trying to build confidence as a new parent, if you've got somebody, especially someone you love and trust, who's in your space and suddenly they're causing some doubt in your mind, it can really kind of get you spiraling there. So I think having those safe people around you. So pick your people, right? Have your little tribe ready to go. And that can be like really close girlfriends. It can be a church group, whoever it is. Just make sure that they have a heart for what you are going through and they're not going to try and step on your toes. Of course, if you ask for advice, you want it to be somebody that you trust their advice and their input. So having that plan ready to go is good. So we actually have like one of our classes, we have a little postpartum study guide. And we talk about brainstorming like all the different things that you are going to need taken care of for postpartum. Is it pets that you have that you need taken care of? Like, do the dogs have to go to a groomer? Do you have, you know, laundry that needs to be done for your husband's job? Whatever it is, you have to delegate those tasks to other people that you know you can rely on. You're only really capable of healing and caring for your baby at this point. So asking mom to take on too much is going to slow down that healing. So those are my three biggest tips. Just making sure there's a good knowledge of what is normal for mom and baby, and then having that plan in place for, you know, meal plans, all that fun stuff. It's really important.
So do you have any insight of some suggestions for maybe someone who doesn't have a tribe? I serve a lot of people that are in harder situations. You know, my passion is really working with lower income, sometimes Medicaid and those kinds of moms. And I just love supporting them.
Yeah.
But, I can't be all things at all times. What would you give suggestions maybe for someone whose tribe is very small, if at all?
Yeah. I would say
is toxic help better than no help? Maybe there's another question.
No, for sure. I think when you are pregnant, this is the time to start work on looking around and seeing what resources are available to you. I don't want couples to, you know, not think of it until the moment they come home with their baby and then suddenly have this realization like, oh man, we are very much alone in this. I would like them to have at least explored a little bit beforehand. So that can be, you know, community groups. There's a lot more community groups now, and you might go to those community groups while you're pregnant and get an idea of who are the people here that I really click with. And it seems like we have some of the same philosophies and values. And so like Lily Chili groups, for example, right? Those are all over the place. And those are free groups that meet monthly where you can get peer-to-peer breastfeeding support. But a lot of pregnant women will go to those meetings, right? And they'll sit in those meetings and they'll listen in and get to know the other women in that group. And they're always, the ones I have experience with at least, they're always so good about rallying around a mom who seems to not have that tribe at that point. So I would say if they can, getting their feelers out there during pregnancy is probably going to be the most helpful for them. Looking at Facebook has a ton of groups. And I know that sounds a little weird, but hey, it's 2025. We are past the weirdness of meeting our internet friends. So I think that looking around on Facebook, finding local groups for parents, for moms, That's a really great idea. A lot of them get together for like weekly play dates where they're just going and walking together, even if it's just like through the mall and like walking and hanging out and chatting. Those are things that you'll, again, you'll go during your pregnancy and you're going to get to know some of those women in that group and you're going to start to build that tribe. And, you know, maybe it's just having that tribe there who's going to set up a meal train for you. Maybe they're not your best friend, but maybe they're going to be somebody who's like, hey, you know what? I love hospitality. Let me take this on for you and make sure you're served in that way. So
I love that. And, you know, honestly, a lot of the moms groups I'm in for like our county, I could totally see if someone posted on there like, look, I'm a single mom, I've got no one, and I just need some ladies in my corner. I bet the comments would just be over. Like they would have a more tribe than they knew what to do with of people that are going to fight for them to just get that rest. Because any woman who's been through birth knows you just got to have some support, whatever that looks like. So
I think it's a sisterhood. It's a sisterhood for sure. Yeah.
It's a hard club to get into.
Yeah.
Birth is a big price to pay, but it's a good club to be a part of. So
it is. And once you're in, it's pretty solid.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. So if there is one thing that you could have every pregnant or postpartum new mom, no, just one fact that is like the keystone thing, or one thing that you think would make the biggest difference in births or in breastfeeding.
Yeah.
What would be your one, like, take this and run with it piece of advice?
It might sound a little cliche given the work that we do, but advocate for yourself and for your baby. Mm-hmm. And this is something that will serve you well in all the rest of your spaces in your life. I think if you can learn how to use your voice, if you can make sure that you are educated on what you want and you feel like you can speak up for yourself, that's going to serve you well. So when you have this couple who they themselves get on the same page, they know exactly what their birth goals are, they present a united front to their care provider, and they're solid. They're not going to be shaken by, like, again, the fear, coercion, and things like that. They are going to be able to advocate for their birth. Then that carries into advocating for their baby, right? So now there's so many things, whether it's going to be your great auntie who tells you not to do something or that you're doing something wrong, or it's your pediatrician, right? Somebody's going to step up to you. Someone's going to say something telling you you're doing something wrong. It's going to happen at any point. It's going to happen. And you'll already have practiced it, and you'll already have that confidence in saying, hey, I've done this before. I've advocated for myself before. I've advocated for my baby during my labor. Now I'm going to advocate for my child. Right.
Yeah, and that's all really of huge. Parenthood, right?
It really is.
When my couples and they're like, oh, these are a lot of decisions to make just about a birth plan. And I was like, welcome to parenthood, making all the decisions and feeling like each one is the most critical one of all. So I think that's great.
Yeah.
A great word of wisdom, a great piece of advice. Should I'll get the t-shirt and wear the hat and advocate. That's awesome. Well, Bridget, thank you so much. I've really loved our conversation. I feel like I want to push all of my families to take the Bradley method now, because, oh, what a difference it would make. That's just so awesome. You've given some really great wisdom, and I just know this is really going to help some families out. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I loved it. It was great. You know, the Bradley method is something that is unique. While it's a long class, I'm telling you, every second is worth it. You will learn so much. You will have so much more information than you thought that you needed, and you will go on to carry that information as you advocate for your family.
So if someone who's listening wants to sign up for your classes, where exactly, what region do you teach in?
So I'm in Macomb County. And I will have couples coming from all over the place. It's definitely worth the drive if you can get here. So I'm in Centerline in Macomb County.
Very good. And do you have a website? How can they, are you on Facebook? Where can they find you?
Yep. So I'm on Instagram. My Instagram name is birth_with_Bridget. And it's BRIDGETTE. And then I'm also on the Bradley Instructor Guide. So you can go on there and you can find any teachers in the entire nation. But I'm on there. You'll just put in your zip code and it will pull me up. You know, you'll be able to find me, and you can click on that and sign up for classes there.
Wonderful. And then if they're listening from Alaska, they can find a Bradley instructor in Alaska and take their class wherever they are. And I think
that's
super helpful. Well, thank you so much, Bridget. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.